This hour of Overdrive, powered by ESET. Protect your PCs, smartphones, and tablets with ESET.
Duran Duran almost gets Gord Miller to leave the room, but he's contractually obligated to come back, so he's here.
I'd like to get paid.
Yes. That's beautiful stuff. I'm in a good mood. This day is going well.
I'm so happy for you. 5 o'clock on Overdrive on this Tuesday. Gord Miller with Mike Johnson. And that was Duran Duran, folks.
What was the first concert you ever went to?
Nazareth.
Oh. Are they a hard rock band?
Yeah. And then Queen.
Oh, well, look at you. Fancy pants. Queen.
Yeah. 1977, I think, was in Edmonton.
Well, that's not embarrassing. It's a little more fun when it's embarrassing.
What do you mean?
Like when did your first concert I ever went to?
Yeah.
Was Culture Club.
Of course you did.
Boy George Gardens.
Did you dress up?
The crazy part is my dad took me. I don't think he knew what he was getting himself into. Like
your dad went to a Culture Club?
Yeah.
I've met your dad.
His company had a box, and so like my little hockey team went or whatever.
Yeah. Did you wear like the parachute pants the whole time?
I didn't get the full dress up going, no. But yeah, that was not as cool as Queen, to say, for my first concert.
You know what's funny is I went to see Rush in Edmonton, and Bob Seger opened for them.
Really?
And I keep all
the tickets. They have the Silver Bullet band with them?
Yeah. For some reason, I keep all the tickets of everything I've ever been to.
You do not.
I do.
Get out of here. I have
all the tickets of every concert, every sporting event.
Where do you keep this? And how does anyone let you have that? How do you keep that?
I have like 4 boxes.
Exactly. That would be massive Tupperware storage bins.
So someday I'm going to make a collage.
You're not going to.
I know. I haven't. To this point, right.
You're 50 yet. Years old. You're not going to start making arts and crafts now of collages of your...
I don't know why.
Going back to college? What are you doing right now?
So anyway, I kept the ticket. And I went to a Bob Seger concert in Ottawa and got to meet him before.
Yeah.
And so I took the ticket. And he said, oh, let me see that. Let me get my reading glasses. Yeah.
Lost a little bit of that.
But anyway, it was great. So I have kept the tickets essentially.
Just for concerts or for sporting events too? Like if you go to see a football game or a baseball
game? Well, now, a lot of it now is it's electronic tickets. Yes. So like I went to some of the Raptor games. I don't have tickets. Well, I have some of the tickets for that, but the ticket for the finals was online. Was on the phone. But no, I have tickets for. I have most of the press.
You're Gord Miller. You don't have to pay for tickets. People just give you tickets.
Yeah, but I keep the ticket.
At least you cop to it. Exactly. I'm like, hang on. You're not buying tickets to any sporting event ever.
I have.
In the last 10 years.
Yeah, I think so.
Not out of the goodness, not like I'm going to buy an Argos ticket to support the club. Like a ticket that would be expensive. You bought a NFL ticket that was $300 a shot.
No, because I got a buddy that works in the NFL.
Yeah, I know you do. Exactly. That's my point. You're not buying anything. I call you when I need a ticket.
You know what the funny thing is? The people think hey, can I go to the Leaf game tonight? Yeah, I got two. They're, $270 each. What? They're $270 each.
Yeah.
That's how they pay the players.
Try playing.
Oh, those days for you must have been like when you're on the road.
Everyone just assumes, and it's such an awkward conversation. Yeah, coming into Minnesota, my roommate from school lives in Minnesota. He's like, yeah, I'd love to come to the game. I'm like, okay, sure. He's like, my dad, my brother, my six of us. I'm like, do I tell them that they're $225 each? I mean, I can't.
Well,
I can't very well say no.
I won't say the player, but a Hall of Fame player told me he had a pain in the rear end uncle who lived in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Who always asked for like 10 tickets every time his team was in town.
COD, baby. COD.
So hang on. So he didn't play in that conference. So he was in the Eastern Conference.
Okay, once a year only.
So he'd go out there. And so it was winding up, 10, 11 tickets is winding up being like 2,500, three grand. So funny, COD'd him.
Amazing. After years of him just rolling up
just
and grabbing them.
Slurping at the trough, right? Just slurping at the free ticket.
He should have sent one of his trainers out there to videotape the uncle trying to pick him up, just jaw hitting the floor.
Well, no, because he checked his cell phone after. There's like 4 calls from the,
There's been a mistake.
There's been some guy. No, he always, no. It says COD, sir.
Yeah. I mean, a team gets 50 tickets on the road that you have to pay for. None of them are free.
Now, at home, you get 2 freebies, right?
On the home, you get 2 freebies and the right to buy 2 more.
Right.
So there's about 80 tickets available. 40 are free. 40, if you have a whole bunch of people, you can choose to buy them.
Right.
Now, if you have a lot of foresight, you get the guys who don't have families, the younger guys.
Right.
And you get on them early. Hey, I need your tickets for that game. I need your two free ones for that game.
Right.
And you try to corral your six or eight for the, if you have a particular event happening.
Now, when the vet, now when the veteran comes leaning on the rookie and says, I need your two for the Saturday night game against Montreal.
Yeah, you give it to him once. Then you have your own people.
Do you know what sport tickets are currency in more than any other? Baseball.
Why is that?
Baseball tickets, you just, it's like the whole sport runs on tickets.
See, I would think for baseball, because no one's ever at the games. Like, there's three stadiums, well, you can't just walk up and get a ticket for $8. Like, they're all empty. I don't need tickets for any baseball game. I'll buy an $8 ticket. I'll be sitting on the dugout in no time.
With us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline is our own Steve Phillips.
He'll tell us.
Steve, tell us your favorite ticket story.
Well, I mean, listen, you know, tickets are, and by the way, baseball, a big part of the revenue for baseball is ticket sales. And a lot of it, preseason tickets. So, you know, what they really want to do is put the full court press on for preseason sales, for, you know, packages, for season ticket sales and that sort of thing. And so I think that, you know, that's a big part of all of it, but also suite sales, advertising and such, and you know, TV deals in baseball, a big part of the revenues now too. Cause, you know, with all the regional sports networks, that are out there, you're talking about a lot of programming that they can fill airtime with it. So my best ticket story is that when I was in second grade, I was, just at the end of the school year, and I have three brothers, and my dad was going to take us to Free Bat Day in Detroit. And I was fired up. I mean, you know, as a kid, to get a Willie Horton, grew up in Detroit, so a Willie Horton or Al Kaline or a Jim Northrup bat was the coolest thing ever. And so I was all excited to go to Free Bat Day. And the last day of school, I came home and I said, you know, this kind of itches a little bit. And I came down with chicken pox on the last day of school in second grade and could not go to Free Bat Day. And was devastated. And so one of my brothers took his buddy, and he got my bat. Like, he didn't even think about, like, let me at least give Steve the bat since he wasn't able to go. He kept my bat. And so it was pretty disappointing. Now, the story ends pretty positively because this was in 1971. And what ended up happening was that the makeup for me for not being able to go to Free Bat Day was my dad was able to get two tickets from his company for the All-Star game in 71 in Detroit.
Oh, the Reggie Jackson off the
Reggie Jackson. I was sitting in the upper deck in right field when Reggie Jackson hit the light standard at Tiger Stadium over the overhang, over the roof in right field there. The All-Star game that had 20-some Hall of Famers participate.
Right.
It was absolutely phenomenal. And to make the story even better, I gave my brothers chicken pox. So they were watching the All-Star game while I was at the All-Star game enjoying Vita Blue and all the guys on the field there, Frank Robinson and Joe Morgan and those guys. They're home, you know, trying not to scratch their chicken pox. So
that's
the
story
ended in a happy story.
Revenge is a dish best served cold or itchy.
Yes.
Or itchy.
Either way works.
Steve, some Blue Jays news. The Blue Jays tonight are in Los Angeles. Going to take on the Dodgers. Clayton Kershaw pitching for the Dodgers tonight.
Good luck.
Is this, like, this Dodger team, I mean, the Dodgers have had great teams over the years. Let's make no mistake about it. Is this the greatest Dodger team ever?
Boy, you know, it's so hard to look at it that way, right? Because I think, all right, Kiki Hernandez is one of the greatest Dodgers ever. And yet, you know, what they do is that you know, and what makes them so special, and it's really an interesting story because it's what the Oakland A's have figured out, too, is that they field a roster of 25 players that are at least average so that when anybody has a day off, they're never replaced by a below average player. And if you have at least an average player at every position, you know, look at wins above replacement and that sort of thing. Yeah. If you don't have a below average player, then you're going to win a lot of games because typically where teams get in trouble is when somebody gets hurt or somebody is getting a day off, they're replaced by a below average player. And the Dodgers at every position have average to above average players on all 25 spots on the roster. And it allows them to consistently put out enough talent to win games over the course of time. So it's so hard to know. Like, I look at this and think, all right, is Hyun-Jin Ryu and guys like that, are they part of the greatest rotation for the Dodgers ever? And yet he's putting up numbers like it. They have figured out how to get the most out of everybody on their roster, how to work the matchups, how to work the situation. So they don't just say, okay, well, it's a right-handed pitcher pitching, so we're going to put in our left-handed batters. Or it's a left-handed pitcher, we're going to put in our right-handed right-handed batters, they say, okay, this is a right-hander that's a sinker ball guy who pitches down to the zone. Who are the best guys to handle that? This is a guy who throws sliders. Who's the best player to handle that? And it's a much more, they go to a whole nother level of the matchups, and their pitchers are much better prepared in how to go about facing hitters. So I actually did a segment for SportsCenter tonight on the young hitters facing Clayton Kershaw. You know, Kershaw used to be a guy that could throw the ball over the plate and get you out with his stuff. Now what he does is he tries to force you to get yourself out with the way that he pitches. So he throws any pitch at any time of the count for a strike. He works against the young hitter's aggressiveness. So if you're looking for a first pitch fastball, looking to jump out of your shoes and swing at it, you're getting a breaking ball from him. Mm-hmm. And he throws almost 70% first pitch strikes. He throws less than 50% fastballs now. So if you're looking for the fastball, you're not going to get it. And then when you look for the breaking ball, you get the fastball. And he's able to throw it at any time of the count. And what he does is he induces bad contact more than he induces swings and misses. Then you're going to face Walker Buehler, who throws 97 up in the zone. And the key for the young hitters is, even though that high fastball looks so good because it's right at eye level, and you're thinking, man, this looks like I can kill this pitch, yet you have to take it. And you have to have the discipline to take it. And for Kershaw, you have to think about, they understand that the first strike you see may not be the best strike that you see during the course of the at-bat, but if you swing at the first strike, you'll never live for the better strike during the course of the at-bat. And then Kenta Maeda, he throws, you know, pitches that move down and in and down and away, down and in, down and away. He'll throw that slider off the plate, and he'll throw the fastball off the corner, just off the corner to get a strike. Then he's going to throw a slider in the exact same spot and break it further, and the young hitters start to chase. So patience is going to be the key for the Blue Jays against the Dodgers pitching staff in this series.
So it sounds like a pretty good system to replicate if you could. How is it that LA has managed to kind of figure out a way to be so successful? Is it financial might to sign players that other teams maybe can't afford as not everyday players, or is it scouting, developing? How do they acquire that kind of depth?
Great question. It's and why are they different than everybody else? So what they're doing is they are actually implementing Moneyball with money.
Ooh, right.
So remember the Moneyball
combination.
Book, right. So Billy Bean in the book Moneyball, it wasn't necessarily about on base percentage, although you know it sounded like he invented it in the book, but it was about where can I find values and how can I take advantage where other people aren't really focusing. And one of the things that Billy Bean has evolved into doing is he'll never have the best players on the field, but he'll never have the worst players on the field. He always tries to at least have above average players. And he can't afford the impact big time free agent who's a superstar because he's a small market team. But he can also avoid the so under performing player and sort of manipulate it, and they still look for values. Now, Billy Bean, it used to be that he had a bunch of, you know, beer drinking, you know, hairy back guys that swing for home runs that couldn't play defense. Then he realized that maybe the value was in defensive players that nobody else was focusing on, and they went in that direction with it, still keeping an eye on base percentage and the importance of that in the game. So they've kind of moved around where they've seen openings, and you see the Astros doing it right now, and I think teams are trying to, you know, replicate what the Astros, the Yankees are doing a great job of that, the depth that they've been able to put together with the injuries they've had. Nobody else can do that. And so everybody else is playing catch-up, I think, really, on the Dodgers, the Astros, and the Yankees when it comes to starting to do that. And I think that Diamondbacks are moving along pretty advanced in that area. The Cardinals had a little bit of a jump start and falling back some. But, you know, everybody else is sort of playing catch-up a little bit in the way they analyze and break down the game.
Well, Steve Phillips, our baseball insider. I want to talk about the Blue Jays in a minute, but I want us to continue what you just talked about, Moneyball. Because you tweeted out last week about some of your favorite people in the game. Moneyball didn't really do it for me. It didn't talk enough about Tejada being the MVP. Zito, Mulder, and Hudson were the great pitching staff. They didn't talk much about the role of steroids in Oakland's success was significant. But the thing that bugged me most is it slandered Art Howe.
Yeah.
And I know you know Art Howe. That's one of the most unfair things I've ever seen in sports. The book was one thing. The depiction
the
of him
movie
in the,
was
in the
not...
movie, he was in triathlete condition. He was not a schlumpy old baseball manager.
Right. And he wasn't a curmudgeon ever.
And he was also under contract for two more years. He wasn't angling for a contract. Right?
Yeah. 100%. I cannot agree with you more that the portrayal in that movie was profoundly unfair to Art Howe. Is he is as kind and as gentle a man as you're ever going to find in baseball. He's a good listener. He's articulate. He's a gentleman. He is he's a professional. And it made him seem like a guy who was, you know, this old curmudgeon who wanted to sort of battle. Now, that was completely unfair. The thing that was even more unfair is that my voice was portrayed by a 5'4" bald accountant from Queens in the movie. That was the most unfair part of all of the Moneyball.
That is very true. So let's actually talk about the Blue Jays here. Really intriguing couple of days here. So last night, TJ Zoik, who was the Jays' first round pick in 2016, pitched a no-hitter in AAA Buffalo. He's 24. He's 6'7". Tonight, on his 23rd birthday, no less, Nate Pearson will make his first appearance at AAA as a pitcher. He was their first round pick in 2017. He's 6'6". Is there reason to get excited here?
Yeah, if there's a fight, we're going to be in a good spot for Toronto.
Or a basketball game.
Yeah, right. If either basketball breaks out, we're ready to go. So, yeah, I think that look, Pearson is a number one starter caliber stuff. In fact, I don't think the Blue Jays have had a prospect with his arm, at least in the last 10 years, maybe ever. I mean, because he can run it up to 103. Now, look, they've had great pitchers with Roy Halladay, but if you look at a guy in a bullpen, you put Halladay on the mound of the bullpen, and you put Pearson on the bullpen, and have him throw a fastball, you're going to go, wow, that Halladay guy's okay, but this Pearson guy is great. Like, I love this guy. Then you have him throw a slider, and Halladay had a great breaking ball. Pearson can throw a devastating wipeout breaking ball. But it doesn't tell the whole story yet, right? You know, there's throwing, and there's being able to throw a certain pitch in a vacuum, but then there's pitching. It's been able to use your stuff in a sequence that works to be able to sort of neutralize the strengths of a hitter to keep them off balance,
right.
And being able to throw the ball over the plate to get hitters out, or to throw it off the plate to get them to chase, and to either induce swings and misses or bad contact. And that's more than just throwing in a bullpen, and that's what Pearson's trying to refine right now. They also have to sort of build them up a little bit, missing so much time with that broken arm last year, and get him right. But you know, all indications are he has thrown the ball tremendously well, and he's growing, learning, developing. I would not call him up this year. I think when a guy's got the potential to be a number one starter, you want to maximize, you know, the sort of service time. So he's a mid-April call-up for me. What you can do is, you know, you got so many off days in the start of the season that you make him your fifth starter next year, on paper, and you bring him up in mid-April so you protect the service time so you get the seventh season out of him, because you want that from a number one starter. And yet I think he's got the stuff to be that. The question is, does he have the pitchability? And that's what he has to grow into. A guy like Anthony Kay down at AAA, who they got from the Mets in the deal, left-handers, had three really good starts after his, you know, sort of a horrible one to start with. He's more of a number three ceiling guy, 6-foot left-hander that I see more, that I would not have a problem bringing him up now. He's 24. Now, for Zoik, he doesn't get swings and misses. You look at the lack of strikeouts there, and so he's more of a control guy. And so when you give up that much contact at the major league level, it does worry me a bit, even though he threw a no-hitter. And so I'm not convinced that he's more of a mid to front-end rotation pitcher until I see more swings and misses in his repertoire.
We shouldn't get blown away by the no-hitter. It's very cool. It's very rare. But is it like a guy going for 40 in the G League, or a guy getting 4 goals in the American League for the Marlies? Like, we shouldn't think that Zoik is going to be something he's not just because he happened to have one incredible night.
Yeah, so what it means is he was great.
Yeah.
Yesterday.
For one day.
He was great on that day. And on that day, he might have really been able to get a lot of big league hitters out.
Right.
But that, you know, one day does not make a pitcher. It's a great part of the story, but, you know, you form an opinion and evaluation of players over time when you see them in more circumstances, because you need more information to be able to do it. And you know, a guy is never as good as he is on his best day,
nope.
And he's never as bad as he is on
right.
his worst day.
Very true.
And it's somewhere in between, and that's what you got to figure out is, can that in-between on a consistent basis be good enough to earn a spot in a championship caliber pitching staff for the future?
So Steve, I learned my lesson in the 1980s covering AAA baseball in Edmonton. They were the California Angels farm team, and a guy named Ray Charles Chadwick came up, who they say threw harder than Dwight Gooden, who was, you know, this is the mid-80s, so Dwight Gooden is the thing, right?
Right, sure.
He did.
I played with him in the minor leagues.
With Dwight?
With Dwight, sure.
Yeah, so this kid, Ray Chadwick, threw like 98 miles an hour. It was incredible. And you watched him warm up. You said, this guy's going to be the next great. And then the Tacoma Tigers came into town, and he struck out the side to start the game. And then the next time around, those hitters, Jose Canseco and Mark McGuire, figured him out. Mark McGuire hit a ball off Ray Chadwick that might still be bounding down the streets of Edmonton. Like, there is a difference between throwing and pitching.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, and it's like the difference between command and control. Like, when we talk about a pitcher's control, that's the ability to throw strikes and not balls. When we talk about command, we talk about, can he throw it in the strike zone where he wants to throw it in the strike zone? And if they set up on the outside corner, can he throw it there, or does it leak back out over the plate where guys hit it out over the ballpark? And if a hitter, if you're backed into a fastball count, you know, 2-0, 2-1, 3-1, 3-2 count, and you throw a fastball to a big league hitter, I don't care how hard you throw it. And look, Nate Pearson learned that last year in the Arizona Fall League. He threw 104 miles per hour to Pete Alonso, and Pete Alonso hit out of the ballpark. Because good fastball hitters, if they're looking for a fastball and it's a fastball count, and you leave it over the plate, now, you know, 104 doesn't get swing and miss anymore. I mean, it should, but because hitters have made the adjustment to the higher velocity, it's a completely different game.
And also, he knows, if a major league hitter knows what the pitch is going to be and it's going to be in the strike zone,
yeah,
he's narrowed it down. Like,
absolutely. Yeah. And you can put a good swing on a pitch in the strike zone. The guys take bad swings. And it's not because they have bad swings, because they're swinging at balls. Big league hitters usually take a really good swing at a pitch over the plate. And if they narrow you down in the count or with runners on base, where you can't really throw it off the plate, where they know you can't afford to walk them, where you know you have to come back into the zone, that's where they do their damage.
Steve, my biggest takeaway from this, I'm so glad, because I've had this thing about Moneyball for almost 20 years. Mm. It really bugged me.
Yeah,
and I don't talk a lot about it because I don't want to sound like a hockey guy crapping on baseball, but Moneyball really bugged me. The book bugged me a little bit. Well, actually more than a little bit, but the movie bugged me a lot. So thank you.
You bet. The one thing I'll say is that I thought was pretty cool was I figured somewhere along the way when he was rehearsing his lines, Brad Pitt uttered my name, and probably when he was practicing with Angelina Jolie, she probably said my name too. And that's the part I take away from it.
That's a guarantee. I think we're just going to go with that. That's a fact.
Let's put that at that. Steve, thanks for talking to us.
Okay, guys. Thanks.
That's awesome. Steve Phillips, join us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Are you leasing a Toyota? You can qualify for a brand new Toyota at no extra cost during Maple Toyota's lease renewal event. Visit mapletoyota.com/lease.
Are you? You didn't point at me today.
I didn't point today. I was rude. It was rude to point yesterday, and I just did it now.
You caught me off guard. I thought I had a line I had to read after you read yours.
You know what? Moneyball did bug me, because I think that it portrayed... So Grady Fuson, who was the chief scout for Oakland,
mm-hmm.
he didn't get fired. He left for a better job in Texas, then went back to Oakland. Like they.
Yeah. So I don't know. I would like that book, probably, but I only watched the movies, and so I only know what the
book
portrayed.
The problem with the book is it's black hat, white hat. It's like you're either on the analytics side or you weren't. And it wasn't accurate. I mean, Mikel Tejada was the American League MVP.
Mm-hmm.
He's hardly mentioned in the book. Zito, Mulder, and Hudson were three of the best pitchers in baseball at the time.
Right.
And the fact that Oakland had a massive steroid problem for a long time. Balco was in their backyard, the Bay Area Laboratory Cooperative, and no one seems to discuss that with the A's.
Well, that doesn't make for a good movie, Gord. So
no.
Your future as a screenwriter is heavily in jeopardy right now. Jeopardy.
But there was an element, to be sure, that the A's tapped into, but it wasn't the whole thing.
I love that analogy by Steve, though. Moneyball
with money. With actual money.
You know, trying to find inefficiencies, market inefficiencies, whatever they might be, in hitting and fielding and whatever it might be, and then having the dollars to back up.
But look where the Bean acolytes wound up. John D. Podesta went to the Dodgers, mm-hmm. and they were a disaster. J.P. Ricciardi came here. Wasn't great. So anyway, that's my rant. And Steve Phillips backed me up, so I feel good about that. When we come back...
If not, he'll hit you with his bat that he didn't get as a child.
Or give me the chicken pox.
Yeah, that's right.
When we come back, Mike and I are going to go back into hockey and talk about the five most improved teams based on what they did in the offseason this year. We'll do that. We'll also talk to Mike McIntyre at 6 o'clock from Winnipeg about... an NFL preseason game that's not taking off, and what Patrick Laine's comments might have meant there. That's all coming up on Overdrive on TSN 1050 on the app and watching on TSN 4. Okay. Let's. No. Stop. Pulse.
We're talking about Moneyball. Talking about more money, more problems. It's all super. It's like tapestries weaving back there.
We're not doing this. Okay. We're not doing this.
Diddy and Mace. Come on.
It's what? We're not doing this. So here's the thing. I'm guest hosting this week. I'm just trying not to destroy the show while Hayes is away. I'm just trying not to wreck the whole thing while Hayes is away.
But it's my last day. So you can have whatever you want the rest of the week. Who's coming in?
Just because you're a professional athlete doesn't mean this is about you.
No, it's not at all.
It's not all about you, okay?
We opened with the Rolling Stones.
And we've had nothing good since. Because you see, what happens is, here's what happens.
I'm excitable.
No, what happens is you get catered to. You do.
That's not true.
Oh, Mike Johnson used to play for the Leafs. Let's make him happy.
That is not true. I wish it was, and I wouldn't even fight it if that was the case. I'd be entirely on board with that attitude if it was at all pervasive in my life in any capacity. As we sit here, I'm not feeling that you really want to make me happy.
I don't.
You're not on the bandwagon.
I'm not on the MJ bandwagon.
Clearly.
I'm not on the MJ bandwagon. But I just feel like we'll
bring your app.
Like, I've been in here grinding all summer. Doing my best. This radio. I
love radio. I do it for free. That's what the fans say. I love this show.
You should. You know what you should do? You should take a pay cut to make this radio station more competitive.
Hometown discount?
You should give TSN 1050 a hometown discount. That's what you should do. Just to make us more competitive.
If you're Matthews, I just want to be like you. You go in big, I just want to be like you. Just paid fairly.
No one wants to be like me. I got news for you. No one wants to be like me. I've been around so long. Like, referees tell me, like, oh, I've been watching my whole life. How old are you? 34? That's possible.
Yeah. Well, see, I don't remember you as... I remember you as the person, but I don't remember, like, your voice as the soundtrack to my NHL career. You certainly would have called lots of my games.
Mm-hmm.
But I associate you, the memories with you internationally, like the World Juniors and like those kind of big moments, of which I was probably too old. When did you start doing World Juniors full time?
Calling them?
Yeah.
02.
02, yeah. So I was too old to have it be kind of when I was in my age where I would have been a participant or somewhere in my. But that's where I, as a player, associate your voice as much as. My career, specifically World Junior career.
I get that a lot. I mean, it's funny. I was walking my dogs like 2 months ago, and there was some kids playing road hockey on my street. And one kid went forehand, backhand, shelf. And right away, they looked at me. Like, can you? Come on.
Did you give it to him? Did you do
it
for him?
Can you believe it?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
Gotta have to. Can you believe it? Well, Taylor Hall and PK Subban rekindle their magic. Didn't they play together on one of those teams?
Subban was there. Subban was there.
Or was Taylor Hall too good to write to the NHL?
Hall played the following year in Saskatoon.
I look to you for these things because I don't know exactly.
So with that in mind, Aaron Ekblad made a comment that, you know, people are missing out on us. I think we're the team to beat.
See.
Okay.
Right. We're going to go somewhere from that. But let's just talk about Aaron for a second.
Good for him.
I guess if you can say whatever you want, it's going to be good for you. Like, do you not have any responsibility to they're the team to beat? Has he looked up state?
Well, I guess...
I mean, what is he talking about?
I guess the problem...
I think we're going to be good. I think we're a team to watch. I think we have a chance to win.
Well, the question...
We're the team to beat.
The question I have is, what do you say to the Luongo the next time you see him? So he retired, we got Bobrovsky. We're the team to beat now.
The only thing holding us back was that Hall of Famer slouch.
So who do you think has had the best offseason? Who do you think is the most improved team in the NHL?
Okay, so we're going to run it down.
We're running it down.
From 5 to 1.
Yes.
Okay, so for me, we're going to start. You want to go at 5 or I'll go at 5?
No, you want to start from 5 up? Okay, sure. Yeah. Hey, your world, Mike. We're just living on it.
All right, perfect. We got it figured out finally. Okay, so at 5 for me, I have Dallas. Dallas made some nice additions. They needed depth scoring. Corey Perry, apparently healthy. Joe Pavelski, who's going to be a 35-plus goal scorer out of the mix to an already pretty good team. So I thought Dallas, to me, slid in at number 5.
I got the Philadelphia Flyers, and here's what I like. I think they've bolstered the defense. I think Matt Niskanen is a nice addition on defense to move the puck a little bit. They've got a good young defense. I just think, first of all, new coach, Alain Vigneault.
Mm-hmm.
First year with, you know, first full year with GM Chuck Fletcher. And I think Carter Hart for a full year.
Yeah. What that can do for them mentally and everything. If they were always wondering.
Right.
If they were.
Just a little. Now, how long have we been saying this about the Flyers? A little stability and goal. Okay, four.
Okay, four. I got the Arizona. My old team, the Howlers.
You are a sucker.
The Yotes.
You're a sucker for the Dogs.
I am. This is the year. This is the year, Gord. They're going to do it. They're going to go back to the playoffs. So we know they got Phil Kessel. They've needed an offensive superstar. You're worried about his mercurial nature. Well, he's got his buddy behind the bench and Rick Tocchet. But more than that, I think what they'll have is a year of good health. Nick Schmaltz is like a returning player.
Yeah.
Antti Raanta is like an addition.
Mm-hmm.
Dvorak, Fisher, down the line. They go Grabner. They were ravaged by injuries, and they were right there.
They were right in it.
And so if they just have a normal season of health, you think of all the players that will be around this year that were not last year, plus Phil.
You know what I would say about your Arizona love? It's the triumph of hope over experience, is what I would say to that.
It's got to change someday.
Number three for you.
Number three for me?
Yeah.
I have the New York Rangers.
Oh, sorry. My four.
Yes.
New Jersey.
Seems slow to me.
Well, here's the thing. I think Jack Hughes is going to be a great NHL player. I'm not sure right away.
Mm-hmm.
I think P.K. Subban can help. But if you're expecting P.K. Subban from Montreal, you're not getting him. The skating's not the same as it was. The back.
Have you not seen his workout videos?
Stop.
What did I do?
Of course, everyone's seen them.
I like PK. I'm happy.
I do too.
Although, so even to this point, I watch some of his videos. I'm like, what are you doing? Like, what is that exercise doing?
Don't expect him to be.
Yeah, the guy who won the Norris.
Right. And I think also Wayne Simmonds will help.
Okay.
You know, power play guy.
Points.
He's great.
Toughness.
Yeah.
Front of the net.
Yeah. Okay, three for you.
Three for me have the Rangers, the New York Rangers.
Okay.
Because Panarin, obviously, significant add. I think Jacob Trouba is one of the better defensemen that switched teams this year. They bring in Adam Fox, who eventually, through a roundabout way, found his way to the team that he wanted. He's an older player that can step in right now. I don't know, he's not going to be great, but he'll be Baker winner. He's going to be, might have to be a top four guy on that team. Mm-hmm. And if he's capable of doing it, there's something to that. Plus, they have some pretty good young players. Capo Caco coming in as well. Hedl will be there. Kravtsov, maybe. They have a lot of better players than last year.
They're too low. You have them too low. My number three is Dallas.
Okay.
I like adding Joe. Now, you can say they added older players. Obviously, you add Joe Pavelski, Corey Perry. Andre Sekera, I think, is
Sekerash.
I think Sekera is a good addition. I think he's a good addition.
For this year.
Yeah.
In a limited role.
Yeah.
And they have the horses that can play big minutes below him.
Yeah.
You got Haskinen and Klingberg can play all day long, and that's a Lindell. You don't need Sekera to play 24 minutes anymore.
Okay, who's number two for you?
Number two for me, Florida.
I agree.
I'm on the Ekblad bandwagon after that. I mean, they were a good team already. They upgraded at the most impactful position, with the most impactful player available at that position. And by getting Bobrovsky alone to that roster, and I don't want to dismiss Brett Connolly sliding down there, Noel Achari sliding down there.
Yeah.
But Anton Strahlman, if you like what he can do, kind of solidify things. But really just Bobrovsky, what he can do for that team.
I think Joel Quenneville.
And Joel.
Joel Quenneville brings a big element there. I just think the presence he has, the stability he brings, absolutely. So that's my number two as well.
Okay.
Number one for you?
So I have New Jersey. Because I look at it this way. So who was the best player whose draft elbows last year? Jack Hughes.
Thank you.
They got him. Who was the best player not in the NHL last year? Gusev. They got him.
Yeah.
Who was the best defenseman to change teams this summer? Maybe Trouba, but maybe PK. They got him. Forrest Oshkosh for winner. And who won the MVP 2 years ago?
Right.
They're going to get Taylor Hall back too. Now it all hinges on Corey Schneider's hips.
Right. So
who also reappeared to be working last year as well.
I was going to say, because all you mentioned there, all those guys you mentioned are great, but none of them play goal.
No. But Corey Schneider had good numbers the last 2 months. But I think just as far as the quality of players they've added, and Wayne Simmonds, we cannot discount him.
Okay.
I got Jersey number one.
I got the Rangers number one.
Yeah.
I got the Rangers at one. I think Panarin is a star.
He is.
Troop is a terrific defenseman.
He is.
Kako is going to be, I mean, Kako's
he's
more,
ready to go.
He's ready now. I mean, the question, you know, and I don't blame the Devils for taking Jack Hughes, because the question is, in 5 years, who's going to be better?
Sure.
You don't draft someone to say who's going to be better now. You want to see in 5 years who'll be better. I think the Rangers, now, it's intriguing with the Rangers because they were sort of in a rebuild mode, and suddenly they go and get Panarin.
Yeah, they've expedited their curve. But I think they've done it with a lot of good young players,
and you're
too.
Asking, and are you asking too much of Lundqvist at this stage?
But they got Georgiev now sitting behind him.
Yeah, Georgiev seems like a real good player.
That split's going to be 44-38.
That defense is really good now.
Really good?
Trouba. I think you add Trouba.
Trouba Shea.
Yeah.
Keep going. Who else in that defense is really good?
Well, they traded Neil Pionk, but
yeah, but like, you know, like you're asking that Adam Fox. I mean, they have.
I think Fox is all right. I mean, he's not a kid. He's
no, but they have Stahl there still, who I think
he can. He's a solid defender in the four spot.
Probably better five. Anthony D'Angelo.
D'Angelo's all right. He's good offensive. He's a good.
You said they're really good.
But who has? I mean, who has 1 through 6?
Nashville.
Well, no, 1 through 4.
They got Dante Faber when they're at 5.
Well, now they do. No, but they've traded Subban, so he's probably in their top 4 now.
Probably. But I think that's the question. Like, Mark Stahl, I'm concerned about a second pair. Like Brendan Smith, who's like been in the minors and playing forward. That's where I think Adam Fox, if he pans out and turns into a top 4 capable defenseman this year, then the Rangers are on to something.
Yeah, I'm getting abused about my saving all my tickets thing. I'm being accused of being a hoarder.
There is a show for people like you.
Stop it. But Natasha Staniszewski sent me a picture. She has all of her tickets, and she made a nice collage of them. So I'm gonna steal this from Natasha. I'm going to make a collage like hers.
Right.
I'm not as... She's way more...
She's crafty.
She's crafty. Well, she's
the baking and everything else.
She's
yes.
Bakey, yeah. Crafty.
Artsy.
Golfy. She's all that stuff. Yeah. I'm not. Well, I used to be golfy. I'm not anymore. But anyway, so I'm being called a hoarder. I'm not a hoarder. I am not a hoarder.
If we were roommates, that wouldn't fly in our house.
It's four little boxes. It's four boxes that are, you know, like, it's not giant. Like,
they just find their way in the recycling bin one day. It just happens by accident.
You would not be a good roommate.
Yeah, so I have the Devils first. You like the Rangers. Either way, the New York area will be better this year. Rangers, Devils will be fun.
And I think yeah.
That's good for hockey.
That's great for hockey. So there's our top five. I went Rangers, Panthers, Stars, Devils, Flyers. Edmonton could be in there too. I think the addition of Dave Tippett, Ken Holland is the manager. I like the trade they made to get James Neal. Like, Neal can add something.
Yeah, for sure.
You went Devils, Panthers, Rangers, Coyotes, Stars. You love it. Good for you.
I'm still waiting for an invite to alumni night down there or something.
You not been invited?
Well, like, something. Drop the puck? Something. I went down for donor's retirement.
You led the team in scoring.
I did.
You were the Coyotes' leading scorer.
It was, okay, you want to hear this embarrassing story that year? So the only time I led a team in scoring in the NHL was that year, obviously. Maybe, yeah, obviously. And so the last game of the season, they're going to give out the team MVP award, which I won, which was amazing. Like, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, sure.
So they bring out the main sponsors, whatever, Ashley Furniture Store, and I got to skate down to the Zamboni and do the photo op and shake. And I was so unaccustomed to being in that situation. I grabbed the trophy, I took the photo, and I bolted. I swear to God, I did not slide down the line and shake anyone's hand. I was just so oblivious and out of my element. That I just it didn't dawn on me. I got back to the bench and I was like, what are you doing?
You know the greatest one with that
what
was?
Are you doing?
You know what the greatest one with that was? And I say the great one for a reason. At the 2005 World Junior, Wayne Gretzky presented the championship trophy to Mike Richards, the captain of Team Canada.
Yeah.
Handed the trophy, stuck out his hand to shake his hand, and Richards turned around with the trophy and skated away.
At least that was he'd won something.
Yeah. Left the great one.
Hanging. It happens to the best of them.
It happens to the best of them. Still to come on this program, we'll talk to Mike McIntyre from the Winnipeg Free Press about Patrick Laine more. We'll revisit the Mitch Marner situation. That's all coming up on Overdrive on TSN 1050 on the app and watching on TSN 4.
We can wait all day. I will wait till the entire song's over. If there weren't so many bad words in it, I'd sing it.
What's the song?
Dre Day? Dr. Dre?
Okay, so the next segment, Mike Johnson, go ahead. No, it's all you.
Okay.
No, seriously, it's all you. No, you take the show because I'm not doing it now.
Okay, cool. Well, I think with all the conversation about Mitch Marner and what's going on with him, maybe do a little lap around the league and check in on Jesse Puljujärvi in Edmonton, whose situation is different in that he's still under contract, played a couple of years, has not gone well for him, has not gone well for Edmonton. And sometimes when players ask for trades or agents get out there want trades, you can tell they're bluffing. They just want out. They probably would come back to the team before missing time. I get the sense that's not the case for Jesse Puljujärvi.
No,
I think this is legit.
And I'm just kidding about bailing on this segment.
No, it's okay. I'll do the whole thing. The feelings, like, I think his feelings are genuinely
absolutely
not hurt, but professionally, he no longer wants to be in Edmonton.
And I don't blame him. Here's the thing. So Puljujärvi gets drafted fourth overall in 2016. Okay. Yeah. And he goes to Edmonton and he plays, I think, 25, 28 games there. Mm-hmm. I think the only other Finn they had was Irko Pikkarainen, who, played like a handful of games. So you did a lot of Montreal games last year.
Yeah.
I wasn't crazy about Kasperi Kapanen making their rosters. Kasperi Kotkaniemi making their team as an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
But they had Lehkonen. Yeah. They had
Joel Armia.
They had Niemi. Mm-hmm. They had a cloister of Finnish players around him to guide him through.
Yep.
Puljujärvi, who did not speak English, was from rural Finland, gets thrown into the deep end in Edmonton, and then it doesn't pan out, and they're surprised.
Yeah.
That to me is Exhibit A in how not to handle a young prospect. That's Exhibit A right there.
That's on the team for not.
No, it's totally on the Oilers.
For not.
That is totally on the
Oilers. Because it's not just about watching him play in the World Juniors with Aho and Laine and lighting it up and say, this guy obviously is big enough and talented enough to play in the NHL. There's other parts
right
to being your best, at your best, than just the physical tools required to skate around the ice.
Well, I've talked about this before, but there's a book called Soccernomics. And it basically debunks a lot of theories. And one of them was, in England for a long time, the Brazilians couldn't play in England.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't acclimate. They couldn't get used to the style. You know what they'd do? A guy would sign, and they'd get him a real estate agent. They'd get him someone to find him a place to live. He speaks Portuguese. He lives in Newcastle. Like, what?
Right.
You think he's...
A little more help, please. A little help.
Right. So smart teams started hiring a concierge, you want to call it that, or an assistant to help their families get through it. Here's a place to go to for groceries. Here's some good restaurants. Here's
your banking contacts.
We've set up a bank account for you.
Here's your daycare. Here's your transit.
Like you're just asking players.
And then to try to take that on, you were talking about families and stuff. Try to take that on when you're 18.
Right.
Like, I mean, I was in high school when I was 18. And I was as dumb and as immature as I am now. I mean, there's no way you could deal with the pressure, no matter how talented you are.
Right.
To just, up to Edmonton, hockey craze city. You're supposed to be one of the bright lights of this renaissance. It's a lot.
And you got to wear it now. You got to wear all the stuff for all the things that went on before you got there.
Yeah.
And it's, which had nothing to do with you.
So how Kenny Holland well. And Kenny Holland doesn't need to trade Puljujärvi, and he should not trade Puljujärvi unless it's going to benefit the Oilers. That's fair. That's business. That's how it goes. You don't have to do anyone a solid if you don't want to. His value is not... Like, what would Puljujärvi's value be in a trade?
Could he get a second
third rounder?
Could he get a second for him? I think the best case scenario for Puljujärvi would be to go back to Finland.
Play in Europe again?
Play in Finland this year. Play in the KHL. Play somewhere. And then have a great year. And then get traded. He's going to need a reset. He's going to need a reset year. But it is absolutely. I mean, I saw the Leafs do it to Luke Shen.
Right.
We've seen it happen to players over and over again. And Shen speaks. Shen wasn't a cultural issue, but putting players in too soon is a huge issue. How old were you played your first NHL game?
22.
Right.
Yeah. And I still found myself in situations. I'm 22. I'm playing for Toronto, my hometown. I lived at my parents' house half the time. And I still found myself in situations that I was kind of overwhelmed with. So, yeah.
When we come back, we're going to talk to Mike McIntyre from Winnipeg about what's going on there with Patrick Laine. We'll talk more about Mitch Marner. We'll also have my ProLine best bets after a tragic,
heartbreaking
near miss last night, because we really should have won last night. But should has got nothing to do with it. You're watching on TSN 4, listening on the app, and listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Setting your kids up with all the latest back-to-school gadgets? Protect their online needs with cybersecurity from ESET. Whether they prefer Mac or PC, ESET has you covered. Your kids can dive into the internet world and explore its limits with the best protection available without any system slowdowns. Give them one last reminder of their loving, protective parents before sending them off. Visit your nearest Staples or Best Buy to enjoy ESET's back-to-school savings.
You've been listening to Overdrive, powered by ESET. Now at great back-to-school savings. Available at Staples, Best Buy, and ESET.ca.